Hotel Shirtless. This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also listen to it on Podomatic, podomatic.com, and put in Camp Constitution. And thanks to our listeners, the show has been number one for that conservative right category over the last several days. And you can also listen to us on our YouTube channel. We upload most of the shows, and I'm sure we're going to upload this one. We have a guest on the line, David Middleton. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing good. How are you, Al?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for coming on at relatively short notice. Dave is a geologist. That means he's a scientist. He's a friend of Willie Soon, and as I say, anybody who's a friend of Willie Soon is a friend of mine. And Dave, I think you hail from the Midwest or the Texas?
So, well, actually, I was born in Connecticut, but I've lived in Texas since 1981.
Probably a wise decision.
Yeah, I left Connecticut shortly after getting out of college.
Well, that's great. And you recently wrote an article about what happened in Brookline, Massachusetts. Now, I live in West Roxbury, which is a section of Boston, which is abuts Brookline. And Brookline is, we have a term around here to describe a far left lunatics, and they call them moonbats. So the term moonbat, it's run by moonbats. It is a very left-wing town, much like Cambridge and even Boston, unfortunately. And Brookline is not only is it a member of the ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiative, but also the Massachusetts Green. What's that called? It's another green organization. Green cities. And so they've been implementing a lot of these what I call Agenda 21 compliant policies. They banned the plastic water bottle a few years ago. I think they've banned that wicked horrible thing called the plastic bag, which, as we all know, the plastic bag conspires with the plastic bottle to go to the South Pacific to strangle whales and turtles and all these other things. So
yeah,
this
do.
Latest upset, this latest insane policy was built new building codes, which means that they can't use any fossil fuels, any new buildings or when they reconstruct them. So tell us a little bit about your background, and then we can go into sort of the article and then the bigger issues.
Well, I have a bachelor's degree in geology from Southern Connecticut State University, sometimes referred to as that fine oil school. I have worked in the oil and gas industry since 1981 for small to mid-sized companies that people outside the industry would have never heard of, but been very successful at it for 38 years now. About 8 years ago, I started contributing to a blog called What's Up With That, which is run by meteorologist Anthony Watts out of California. And it kind of builds itself as the world's most widely read climate change and global warming website.
I have the honor of meeting Anthony at a conference in New York City about 2009 and interviewed him. And he is a brilliant guy, and I highly recommend his website. So what's up with that? W-A-T-T-S.
Yeah, Anthony is great. It's been an honor to be associated with people like Anthony and Willie Soon. But my articles tend to focus on paleoclimatology, which is very much related to geology, particularly sedimentary geology, which is what I do for a living. And my other posts are largely on energy policy, particularly the foolishness of moving away from fossil fuels, particularly natural gas. Natural gas is the least expensive, most widely available energy source we have in America for generating electricity. It's very inexpensive, very efficient, and to even put a cherry on the sundae, it's the best way next to nuclear power if they were actually serious about lowering CO2 emissions. because on a megawatt for megawatt basis, or BTU per BTU basis, natural gas emits half as much CO2 as coal. Now, granted, nuclear emits none, but natural gas is extremely inexpensive. So you could actually, and the United States has reduced its carbon emissions over the past 10 years, largely due to fracking and the just explosion of natural gas production, particularly from the Marcellus and Utica shale formations, which are right there in your backyard, in Pennsylvania, New
That's
York, and
correct.
Ohio.
I
Unfortunately,
understand, though, they won't let them tap it in New York. I have a friend and former colleague whose farm sits underneath that shale, but they can't touch it, legally.
Yeah, it's insane. And the governor of New York is threatening the local utility for not providing natural gas when he's not allowing, well, one, not allowing fracking in the state or the production of the Marcellus there locally. And they're also fighting tooth and nail against every pipeline that comes in. And that's a problem you all have in Massachusetts too. And I'm
Yes.
sure my former home state of Connecticut has the same problem. I mean,
Well, your
there's a
article went into the. It was interesting that Massachusetts, with our left-wing governor Baker, is doing his utmost to make sure that gas isn't used as much. But we have to import gas, a good chunk of it, from Russia, and they have to
Right.
ship it instead of by pipeline, they have to ship it by boat, which isn't all that efficient, compared to a pipeline.
Well, about 10 years ago, the United States, we were building natural gas, LNG import terminals all over the country. There are quite a few down here on the Gulf Coast because we had a shortage of natural gas. And then, thanks to a brilliant engineer named George Mitchell, who really pioneered the use of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing to release gas from shale formations, which is the original source of the gas. I mean, these formations are just loaded with oil and gas, but we'd never been able to effectively get them out before because shales are very low permeability rock. So by fracturing the rock, we all of a sudden have plenty of natural gas, and the Marcellus is just a monster. I mean, it's the production has just literally, I mean, that's a real hockey stick, that natural gas production. And the same thing in Pennsylvania and Ohio. But yeah, you have in Massachusetts, I think there are two or three natural gas LNG import terminals, and no, well, of course, you don't have any natural gas production, but there's no export terminals nearby. Right now, along the Gulf Coast, we still have a couple of import terminals, but some of them have been converted to export terminals, and other export terminals are currently being built because, the United States has an excess of natural gas, and we can sell that overseas, and I suppose even sell it to Massachusetts by sending it around in a tanker.
Well, it's interesting too because for many years, since they created the EPA back in the 70s, and I think one of the goals was to become energy independent, or the Department of Energy, I'm sorry,
Department of Energy.
was created, I think, during the Nixon administration, and the goal was to be energy independent by certain so many years. When government has these plans, we're going to do something in 10 years or 20 years, it always fails. I think at that point we were what, maybe 25% dependent on foreign imports, and then, but within 20 years we were at 50%. Now that's changed. Now we're exporting gas
Yeah,
in
I
some
mean,
cases oil.
we still do import quite a lot of crude oil, but we also export crude oil. And when you take the refined products that we, the oil or the gasoline and other refined petroleum products, our total petroleum product balance is, I mean, we're an exporter of the petroleum products, and we're an exporter, a net exporter of natural gas now. And yeah, well, actually, the Energy Department was created under the Carter administration, and the EPA was under Nixon.
Nixon, that's right.
And the amazing thing is that really Rick Perry is the first Secretary of Energy I can remember who was actually focused on energy production, domestic energy production. And
That's really encouraging because, like all the other ones, were there to make sure we weren't independent or producing energy.
It's funny, your former governor, who I voted for president in 2012, one of his campaign platforms was that we could have North American energy independence by 2020, and people laughed at him. You know, that was back when the mantra was, we can't drill our way out of this. Well, we did. And that's been a phenomenal
Because of the
story.
great technology. Now, let me ask you, as a geologist, let's say the average layperson, they hear stories of gas people turning on their water and it catches on fire, or maybe the gas pipeline's leaking. We had that problem in a town in Massachusetts. I think it was Lawrence or Lowell last year, or Andover, Massachusetts. And
Yes,
so people are,
I wrote an article on that
so.
last year too.
So
But
rest put my put our put the person's fears to rest, if you could, on that issue
well, if
or
your
issues.
natural gas pipelines are old and not properly maintained, you can have explosions and gas leaks that can happen. Now, regarding the nonsense about fracking, causing water to catch on fire. There's just, I mean, the EPA did a big study a couple of years ago, and well, it was more than a couple of years ago, about 4 years ago, and they found no evidence at all that fracking had ever affected any groundwater. Now, when you're drilling a well, if you have a, we put a lot of steel pipe and cement in the well to isolate the much deeper hydrocarbons from anything we drill through up shallow. Occasionally, you'll have a bad casing job, and you do sometimes have accidents. And when that happens, the oil company or gas company is responsible for any damage that occurs. But those are extremely rare. Most of the examples of, people's tap water catching on fire or other methane intrusions into groundwater are due to the fact that their wells were drilled through coal seams, or that their aquifer is in glacial till, which is just loaded with methane. A glacial till is the kind of the rubble that was left behind by the glaciers in the last ice age 10,000 years ago. So,
So it's all naturally occurring. It's got nothing to do with fracking.
right. And fracking itself is an old technology. It's been in use for more than 70 years. It's a common well completion procedure. What is new is the ability to drill very high precision horizontal wells with the instrument packages that are on the drill bit, on the drill string, that we can know exactly where we are in the subsurface and actually be logging the well, collecting a record of the resistivity of the rock, electric resistivity of the rock, natural gamma ray emissions, and this tells us whether we're in sandstone or shale, and whether there's oil or gas or water in the formation. So that's really the big technological advances, is the ability to do that, to precisely drill these directional wells.
Now, in Brookline, Massachusetts, and in towns and cities pretty much around the country, around the world, they're passing these, they call it, in Boston, it's called Vision Boston 2030 or whatever the case, 2030, 2050. They're trying to set these ridiculous goals of reducing their carbon footprint to zero, to neutral. What happened in Brookline? It seems to be, it's going to be impossible
Oh,
to
yeah.
be able to build anything. And like I say, you want to stay in the dark and freeze to death in the cold weather.
Well, that's an old saying from the oil patch from back in the 70s and 80s, that if the Yankees don't like the price of oil, they can freeze in the dark for all we care. But the I mean, the fact is, Massachusetts, your home household heating fuel is, well, half of the of your of it is natural gas. And another big chunk of it is the bunker oil, which is what I grew up with in Connecticut. We'd have the oil tanker come out, once a month or so,
Right.
and fill up our tank. And I just remember this old
Basically,
monstrous.
it's basically diesel. It's a diesel fuel,
It
basically,
is.
right?
It is. It's
Yeah.
like diesel. It's a little bit.
A low grade. Yeah.
Yeah. And so your state's already, most of the homes are heated with natural gas or oil. And regarding your electricity generation, that's about 85% natural gas, which, it's insane to not to be resisting natural gas pipelines into the state when you're that dependent on natural gas.
And
But
we also shut down, we're shutting down what's left of our nuclear plants too.
let's see, that was
Yankee Row in Vermont.
Yeah. I got to tour Connecticut Yankee back in the 1960s when I was in grade school. I thought that was really cool. I'm
Did
sure
you? Yeah.
Connecticut.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was in college, there was a big protest over, I believe it was in New Hampshire. They were building a
Seabrook,
nuclear plant.
yeah.
Yeah, and it was, I remember it was the
Seabrook.
Clamshell Alliance. They were a bunch of nitwits
That's right.
that were
That's
protesting
right.
it.
And Governor Mel Thompson, who was a Southern boy, a transplant, he gave a speech and he said, "I shut the Clamshell Alliance." They arrested this son of a police chief from Pennsylvania, and when they called the police chief, he said, "You keep my son in jail for a week. I teach him a lesson."
The good old days.
I noticed in the article you have a chart of the most expensive or the kilowatt hour, and it looks like all of the New England states and New York are in the top 10. And I would say that has something to do with this regional greenhouse gas initiative. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not in detail. I've kind of,
Yeah.
looked at it, but it just, if a state really wants to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions, the only way to do that would be to replace coal-fired power plants with nuclear power and natural gas. Wind and solar, I mean, wind works okay in Texas because we've got a huge wind resource out in West Texas. The wind resource in Massachusetts onshore is not that good. Offshore is a little better, but offshore wind turbines are very expensive to build.
And maintain.
Well, I mean, I worked the Gulf of Mexico actually, offshore exploration and drilling, and yeah, anything you put in the ocean's rough. I mean, just the cost to maintain platforms can be prohibitive at times. But and then I've noticed that Massachusetts is literally covered with solar panels, but you really don't have much of a solar resource there either. So
See,
I
yeah, I when I drive on the Mass Turnpike, which is I-90, goes from
Right.
Boston all the way out to across the country, all the way to Washington State. You notice that where there used to be a beautiful field, a grassy field, you've now got these so-called solar farms. I've never seen anyone actually harvest solar before. And it gets you a, they use the term farm like it's, oh, it's a natural thing. And
Yeah, I think that's kind of along the lines of a tank farm, where it's just a collection of things in one area. But yeah, it is funny when you think of it that way. It's sort of like trying to harvest I don't know, trying to harvest what a good southern crop, watermelons in the Arctic. It's like, well, that's not going to work very well. Florida, yeah. I mean, my family used to. That's where my dad was from, was Florida, and I mean, they grew watermelons like crazy, but you don't really grow them very well in New England.
That's right, because of our relatively short growing season. But what's interesting too is that wind, no, I'm sorry, wind turbines and solar panels aren't as pro environment as many people think, because of the way they're made. A wind turbine is very expensive. It takes a lot of fossil fuels to lay the concrete, to clear cut the forest. If they're up on top of a hill, or
Steel and
they're clear
concrete.
cut,
Yeah, you need coal
and
to make steel and concrete.
that's right. Now, looking at a solar panel, compared to, let's say, so many gallons of oil, or so many oil, gas is measured by what?
Usually,
How what the
it depends. In the industry, we generally measure it by the MCF, which is 1,000 cubic feet of gas, or the BCF, billion cubic feet of gas. And basically, 1,000 cubic feet of natural gas is equal to 1 million British thermal units, BTUs. That's kind of
Now,
the
just look
conversion
at
that
the
we do.
average household. Let's say the household with maybe a mother, father, and three children, where they're using the washing machine, there's maybe two, a refrigerator, a freezer in the basement, appliances going on, computers, television sets, lights. What would it take, if you can give an analogy, if I had to heat that, run that house, how many solar panels would I need per acre versus gas or oil? I know if you can work that figure or not.
Yeah, I don't have that off the top of my head. I did write a post about that a couple of years ago, the basically the land footprint of various different power sources. But the solar panels, I mean, it's huge compared to natural gas. What you can generate with a modern combined cycle natural gas turbine in just, you know, a couple of acres is what you would have to have, you know, I don't know, but a million acres of solar panels. I mean, the big difference is that the solar only works when the sun shines. So
right.
If you have a 100-megawatt solar facility, but it's only going to deliver about 25% of that nameplate capacity because that's really all that it gets. Whereas a natural gas power plant or a coal power plant is capable of delivering 85 to 90% of its nameplate capacity because they're rarely down for maintenance. And as long as they've got fuel, they're going to produce energy. Nuclear power plants easily exceed 95% of their capacity because they're almost never down. So that's really where it comes into. You need more area for the same installed capacity, but then you need three or four times as much installed capacity to generate as much electricity with solar and wind. And then you would also have to have something to store the excess energy for use, you know, when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining. And usually this is lithium ion batteries, and that essentially would double the cost of the installation. So you start out with something that already costs, you know, on the order of a dollar per megawatt hour versus natural gas that costs about 30 cents.
Mm.
And then I got to get my numbers right here. For megawatt hour, natural gas is about $30 per megawatt hour. Wind and solar realistically are close to 100, maybe a little bit less now. But if you add in the battery for backup, that's going to double the cost of your wind and solar. And if you don't have the battery backup or some other storage device, well, then you've got to keep a natural gas power plant, usually a more expensive peaker type plant, basically spinning to back up the renewables when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining. So, I mean, it's just not efficient.
Now, the average wind turbine is what, at 20%, 15%? I mean, it can never be maximum.
In Texas, we get maybe close to 30% on average, and there are times during the
30%.
Year. Yeah, we can even sometimes push 50% because there are times of the year in Texas when there is a very steady, strong wind out on the West Texas, the area known as the Llano Estacado, which is...
Do you call it the Santa Ana winds?
No, we don't, but I just call it windy. I mean, you drive out there, and it's kind of cool. You see all these turbines, and they're just slowly spinning, and then in between them, there's oil and gas wells all over the place. So, you know, Texas is kind of an energy amusement park.
Now, with the solar panels, like I say, you need sunshine, or at least some kind of sunlight. Up here in the Northeast, we just got a nice little couple of snowstorms. I remember driving through and seeing the panels covered with snow.
They're not going to work very well that way.
They don't work, so you really got to go out there and clean them off, right? Cover it with snow. They don't work very well. And how is it possible to store the energy? You say you need a lithium battery to store the energy that's produced by a solar panel.
Usually that's how it's done. You would, when you have excess power from the solar panel, you would just use it to charge your batteries and then use the battery to feed the grid when the sun's not shining. Not terribly efficient. As I said, it more or less doubles the cost of the installation. If you have a period of time when you have, you know, a bunch of cloudy, stormy days in winter, your solar panels aren't going to be doing much. Yeah.
Now, in Brookline is a sort of a densely populated town. It's I won't call it a suburb. It's a separate entity from Boston, but there aren't any, there's some nice gardens and things like that, but not a good place to put up wind turbines, not a good place to put up solar panels. You're not going to be able to get too many, maybe in a few rooftops. So Brookline is going to have to now be dependent upon more so-called renewable energy. And how is that going to affect the environment? They're going to have to take some more fields somewhere or put up some more wind turbines somewhere to be able to accommodate this ridiculous law
Fortunately, it only affects new construction, which is probably not going to be that much. So it's really it's more an exercise in virtue signaling than anything else, saying, hey, look how green we are.
I see what you say. Yeah, but, I see what you mean, yeah.
But in the other case, from a year ago, when they actually disconnected the natural gas to, was it 9,000 customers? I can't remember. It was quite a few. Yeah, that was in Andover and a couple of other places.
Yes.
I mean, they were given the option of the state was going to help them switch to something else. But, you know, if you look at the cost, per million British thermal units to switch to, electric heat, it was $64 per BTU. Whereas natural gas was only $12.74, and so if you go to electric heat, which you're dependent, then again your electric bill is going to go through the roof. And in a state where you're already paying 22 cents a kilowatt hour, that's kind of painful.
Well, when it talks about what we're seeing about new construction in Greater Boston, we're seeing these so-called green buildings. And what they're doing is they'll take an old brownstone that's we're noted for in Boston or Brookline, and tear it down and put up maybe a 10 or 15 story building, storefronts, on the lower level. The rest are small unit apartments. So we're seeing that. If you've been to Boston a number of times, around the Fenway Park area, Fenway Park area looks like Midtown Manhattan. And in fact, I was just reading an article, 60 Minutes did a story in Seattle about homelessness because of the terribly increase in rent that the poor lower middle class can't afford the rent. And if they can't find place to live, within the outskirts of town, they're out in the street. And I think maybe we'll see that more of this unless they have, they got rid of the rent control. So we're going to see a lot of people probably be out in the street, and maybe not a whole lot of construction. Maybe this will put a stop to that. Might be a good thing. Some of these ridiculous green buildings.
It could be. We see that down here too. The downtown areas of Dallas Houston,
Austin. Yeah.
Oh, Austin. Yeah. I was just in Austin a few weeks ago, and for a geological conference at the University of Texas, and that part was pretty neat, but the rest of Austin I could just do without.
We have 2 minutes left. Let's say that you were testifying at a hearing in Brookline, Massachusetts, and you had 2 minutes to testify. What would you tell these town committee members on this issue?
I'd tell them you're insane if you think that you can replace natural gas and heating oil in Massachusetts. And then I would tell them to watch the George Carlin video about saving the planet, which is very profane but hilarious.
Yeah. And I don't know. Profane and kid, profound, right?
It is profane and profound. And George Carlin was a genius, and He lists all the things the planet's been through and says, if you think a plastic bag is going to affect the planet, and he dropped a few F words and kind of left it. And that's the other thing. To me, it's crazy. I mean, we could do things to clean up the environment, and that's usually good if they're economically reasonable. But the notion about saving the planet is really stupid. I mean, the planet doesn't even notice we're here.
Yeah.
And of course, these people with their silly little so-called reusable bags, and they're thinking they're saving the planet, riding their bicycles. And Brookline, too. Brookline is covered with bike paths. And because of that, the number of bike fatalities have tripled. And of course, it's awfully hard to ride a bike in a snowstorm or an icy road. Anyway, we're running out of time. If listeners would like to learn more about your work, where could they go?
Probably the best place would be to go to What's Up With That. And if you whatsupwiththat.com. With that's WATTSUPWITHTHAT.com/author/debunkhouse, DEBUNKHOUSE. And that's a list of all the articles I've written for What's Up With That.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for coming on.
I enjoyed
thank
it.
You for listening. All right. Have a Merry Christmas.
You
I
too.
Maybe someday our paths will cross. I'm sure they will.
Maybe one of these days I'll get to that climate conference that they have every year.
Well, look me up. You have my. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you.
Really, we'll stay in touch. All right. God bless. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio, WBCQ, The Planet. And until next week, may God richly bless you. Thank you.